Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Remote working looks set to be here to stay in some way, shape, or form. But what exactly does this mean for leadership and management teams? On today's episode of the HR Room podcast, we're going to be discussing this in further detail with Dr. Ryan Sherman, Chief Science Officer of Hogan Assessment Systems, where Ryan works with top organizations to select the best business leaders and CEOs by leveraging personality data. Thanks for joining us today, Ryan.
Happy to be here, Sarah. Thanks a lot.
We're also joined by none other than the founder and managing director of Insight HR and HR Room regular, Mary Cullen. Welcome back, Mary.
Thank you, Sarah.
So Ryan, maybe to kick things off, you could just tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background.
Sure. I'm the Chief Science Officer at Hogan Assessment Systems, as you said. Prior to that, I was an academic studying mostly personality and organizational psychology. I did my PhD in personality psychology. So I like to tell people that I'm a personality psychologist, which I think sounds like a very odd career to lots of people. I use that knowledge and use that background to run our data science team here at Hogan Assessment Systems. We have a world-class data science team. We do data analytics for all kinds of organizations all over the world. We translate our assessments into nearly 50 languages and do assessments from more than 100 countries around the world. And so we use our knowledge and our expertise in analytics and personality science to help organizations make better decisions about things like who to hire, who's high potential, who's a safety risk, and how to develop their leaders.
Brilliant. And is this kind of all data that would be gathered like at the candidate stage, is it?
Most of the data, I would say 90-95% of the data we collect is collected from candidates themselves via personality assessments. But we also do some survey work. We do safety climate survey work. And we also do some sort of team orientation survey work as well.
Thanks a million, Ryan. Mary, over the last year or so, we've seen a shift in the world of work leading to many organizations adopting remote working models, at least in some sense. But what kind of challenges do you think that this has actually presented?
I think there's a range of challenges that organizations are now facing as they, I suppose, shift from traditional workplaces into more hybrid and remote work models. And I guess some of the challenges that we're seeing, particularly from leadership perspective, are around the whole areas of, you know, translating in the virtual world. You know, how does that charisma and, you know, in-person presence that a lot of our CEOs have translate into that virtual world? So we're seeing quite a lot of challenges around that as the demand from the workforce is for more flexibility. And yet, probably a lot of leaders have been very focused on, you know, those in-person traits that have got them to that C-suite. And that has, I suppose, traditionally been the route for really ambitious employees in the workplace. So there's, I guess, a range of challenges and difficulties for organizations as they grapple with office space, safety, you know, presence in the virtual world, you know, keeping people motivated. Ryan in Ireland, I guess we're a little behind the US in that we've only recently emerged from lockdown. So, you know, we still don't have our workforces fully back to work at the moment. And so for a lot of organizations in Ireland at the moment, it's one, reopening, two, dealing with the new demand from the workforce that we're seeing all over the world at the moment anyway. And three, how does the CEO present in that kind of a world and change? And how does the leadership present and change? So we're seeing loads and loads of challenges, some exciting ones, and then some real headaches for our clients.
That's something that I'm really looking forward to discussing with Ryan in a moment. But before I do kind of raise the question with Ryan about virtual leadership, Mary, like, do you think that these hybrid and virtual workplaces really are here to stay? I mean, we're seeing so much about it in the media at the moment. Do you think that it's just kind of being hyped up? Like, do you predict that in time organizations will go back to their old ways? What do you think?
I think it's here to stay. You know, I can't really see now that employees, certainly in Ireland, have worked for the last 15 months fully remotely. A lot of knowledge base workers have worked in that way. And even in environments where you've had that mix of frontline workers and knowledge base workers, people have got very used to the kind of flexibility that they now have. So I really don't see it going away. And a lot of organizations have been announcing over the last months their changes in terms of how they're structuring their businesses and changing their office spaces. So they're investing in, you know, developing collaborative spaces in the workplace, which formerly would have just been your Googles and your LinkedIns and your eBays and your large corporates who are doing that. And now you're seeing much smaller organizations also having to deal with the same kind of challenges. I believe it's here to stay. I mean, our own team, you know, of people are talking about, well, yeah, this particular arrangement suits me. I don't see myself going back into the workplace, whereas others maybe want to spend some bit of their time there. So it really is, I think, the future of work.
I suppose there's a lot to be said for opening up, you know, talent attraction as well. We're no longer confined to having to work in a specific area. You know, you can work anywhere really in Ireland if the role allows. So Ryan, I'm going to ask you now, there was something that I read that you had written before about the best way to ensure a smooth transition to a virtual workplace, and that is to have an effective virtual leader at the helm. Do you think that there are certain characteristics that a leader needs to have in order to lead a remote team that differ somewhat to the characteristics of a good leader in a more traditional, say, office-based role?
Yeah, so that's right, Sarah. So a couple of things there. When we think about what's most critical for teams, whether it's virtual, whether it's in-person or whatever, or any kind of organization, there's a whole bunch of research on this showing that leadership is really critical. And so it's no surprise, of course, that leadership is really critical when we're making this transition from in-person to remote or some sort of hybrid. And I agree with Mary. I think this is here to stay for a long time as well. So the big question is, what is it about leaders that makes them effective in those sort of virtual environments? And what we see there is there's a lot of actual overlap between virtual leadership effectiveness and in-person. But there are a few differences that can really stand out, I think, in a virtual environment. And so one of them, and this was not actually mentioned in the article that you referred to, is what we measure on our dark side, or our sort of the kinds of personality characteristics that will get you into trouble. One of these characteristics is called reserved. And that characteristic is sort of about pulling away distancing yourself, particularly if you're under stress or you're feeling, in fact, even if you're feeling too comfortable, right? We might think of stress and comfort as the opposites, but it's really something that can come out when you're not managing your impression. You're not really thinking about how other people are perceiving you. And one of the things about a virtual environment is that really creates that opportunity to bring your impression back, right? You don't have to, you're not in front of people every day. You're not in the work, in the workplace with them. And so that can lower your guard, so to speak, in terms of managing your impression. And so something like reserved can really come out in those circumstances. And reserved is about pulling away, distancing yourself from your team. And for a leader, this can be disastrous because in virtual workspaces, there's already that natural sort of distance. And if your team needs you, if your team needs you to know you're available, team needs you to answer questions, your team needs you to point out the direction to guide them in some way. And you're sort of like, you guys just go, you know, do your thing. And I'm going to stay here in my virtual space and do my thing. That might not lead to the most effective team. Again, if your team needs you to do these things, we can guarantee that your team is headed for disaster that way. So those kinds of things can show up particularly well in virtual workspaces that we don't see them showing up. It's harder for that to show up in the office. So things like that are what we're looking for.
And are there any kind of mistakes that you've seen from leaderships who are moving into that, leaders who are moving into the more virtual kind of leadership space?
Yeah, for sure. One of the big ones that I think we saw right away, and I think we're still continuing to see, is lots of concern from leaders about performance management, right? So how am I going to make sure that my employees are working? How can I trust that they're working if they're not in the office? That's one of the big ones that we see leaders focusing on. And I think that's a mistake for a couple of reasons. One, I've always felt like if you didn't think your employee could do the job without you watching them, maybe this isn't the right employee for you. Maybe this isn't the right fit for this job, right? Maybe there's something amiss here. Maybe you're not compensating them fairly for their job. There's something off about that. If you don't feel like you can trust them, then your relationship with the employee is somehow already flawed. So that's number one. But I think the other thing that this misses is that we're concentrating on that performance management part, but there's a really big part that I think we do miss when we go virtual that a lot of that's not getting quite as much attention. And that's that training aspect. So some organizations do a great job with training. Some organizations really have all kinds of modules and all kinds of, you know, weeks and months of training for their employees to get onboarded. But some organizations, I would think many organizations actually train employees by having them sit right next to the master, right? This is the person who's been doing this for a decade, and you're going to sit right next to them, and that's going to sort of be your training. And in virtual environments, that's very different. And I think that's what we're, you know, we're 12, 15 months into this sort of remote hybrid situation. And I think that's when we're starting to see it, because now organizations are hiring. We're seeing lots of people move, switching organizations and getting onboarded. And I think this is where we're going to see really big differences. And I don't think leaders are focusing as much on that aspect as they are on that performance management aspect.
What would your opinion be on that, Mary? Do you kind of see the same thing happening?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I'm seeing certainly from a trust perspective, I think a lot of managers and leaders are struggling with that whole area, and that, you know, they're used to being in an office environment where they're able to see that people are busy. But when they're looking at people being busy, it's simply, you know, they might be on a phone or typing furiously on a keyboard or interacting with colleagues. But it's not, they haven't been focused, I guess, on output. And in the kind of remote world, the output is all that you can really measure, because you can't see what somebody is doing in their home. But I would absolutely agree with you, Ryan. Trust is everything. And if you don't trust people in the first place, certainly when you can't see them and monitor them, you know, that has become more pronounced for many people. But I'm also seeing things like, you know, packing days solidly with, you know, video calls, which are going on for way too long, and creating pressure points within the organization, so much so that the ability to be innovative or collaborative or just casual isn't there because it's so task focused. And I think in some ways, being a virtual leader is very different from being present in an office. You can communicate quite easily with a number of people, maybe casually in an office-based environment, and it becomes a little more challenging in a workplace environment or a virtual environment where you're trying to communicate maybe by giving one-on-one time to people. But how many calls might you need to make if your team is too big? And what impact is that having on the manager? And like Ryan says, that withdrawal and reserve, I have noticed it in terms of dealing with our clients from some of the problems that they're talking to us about. So I'm seeing managers really overloaded at the moment, trying to be very focused on well-being and welfare and all of those kind of things, but simply not having enough time and saving all their work, as they believe, until the end of the day or before the day starts, and spending all day on, you know, incredibly long video conferencing calls. So I think a lot of that is going to require work. But what I'm curious about, Ryan, is, you know, in terms of recruitment for leadership and management positions, do you think we'll be looking for different skill sets in the future from our leaders, managers, for that virtual world?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think you're right, Mary, the point you made there about you know, how managers are spending the time. I think you're right that a lot of managers want to be sensitive to these kinds of issues. And I mean, just I can speak from personal experience, right? So my team used to sit, you know, within 20 feet of my desk. And, you know, if I felt like somebody was overloaded or overworked, I could come by and I could check on them and I could, you know, and this could take a minute, 2 minutes. But now we've built these check-ins that are much more formal. Now it's a 15-minute Zoom call. You know, you start multiplying that out across your team. And I think it is very exhausting. So, you know, as you said, I think it wears on managers, but also wears on the employees too, if they go, okay, I've got this scheduled call again. So I think in terms of what our organization is going to be looking for, again, I think most of those critical leadership components are still going to be the same as what we've seen in other spaces, but there, you know, certainly is going to be some, one of the characteristics we've identified is interpersonal sensitivity. And that's really about managing with your individuals, being able to understand who needs more one-on-one time with me and who doesn't need as much. You know, it's really tempting to say, okay, I'm going to give everyone equal amounts of time, but that's probably not the best strategy. And so, you know, leaders who score a little bit higher on interpersonal sensitivity tend to be better at judging those individual differences and can tell who needs how much attention, who needs this much one-on-one time, and can then just manage accordingly.
And I suppose it's not even necessarily about like how good their performance is, you know, how much one-on-one time they might need. It's about kind of, I think that a lot of people are discovering that they're a lot more introverted than they thought they were, or they might work better in a certain way. Like they might work better when they're not disturbed for 5 hours, whereas you might have another team member who actually does need the constant feedback, not necessarily because their performance would be lower, but just because they need that in order to be kind of motivated. So it's a really interesting one. Sorry, Mary, I could tell you were about to say something there.
Yeah, I think remote work is not for everyone. You know, that there are probably certain personality types that, you know, do better in a, you know, office space environment where they can interact with people. And I guess when it comes down to choice, which is a huge debate here at the moment, Ryan, in terms of Ireland, you know, should employees be getting that choice? Should they be able to work from any country in the world, never mind whether or not that's at home or somewhere else, you know? And I'm quite intrigued by the whole idea of being a digital nomad. I'm even considering the idea myself. Let me try it in Italy and see how I get on, because, you know, the last 15 months I've managed a team and my business remotely effectively. Now, do I need to be in the same geographical area? That's the question. And I think a lot of people are considering that question themselves and considering what it might look like. There is a level of freedom that goes with it, but I'm still a real believer that certain personality types, you know, get energy from that interaction, mm-hmm. while others can function very effectively in a remote world. I don't know if you would agree with that, Ryan.
No, I would agree. In fact, there was, and these polls differ, right? So we know that there's a big chunk of the workforce who you know says, well, I quit my job if we have to go back, right? If we have to go back to in person. But there's also a sizable chunk of the workforce who's saying just the opposite, right? That if we don't go back into the office, then I'll look for a new job that is in person, that is in the office. And so I think it's really interesting. And clearly this falls on personality lines as well for those. But this question of, you know, can we sort of permanently work remotely or sort of be nomadic kind of remote workers, I think is an interesting one as well. You know, maybe not so much in Ireland, but I think across Europe, for example, there's certainly going to be time zone kinds of things that people have to be thinking about. I don't know what all the legal things are around taxes and things like that in Europe. I know in the United States, that's one thing that companies are facing. So even big companies that had offices and headquarters in multiple states in the United States are facing issues of, well, can we actually hire somebody in that state? What are the tax implications of hiring somebody in that state? And this is something, you know, if somebody says, hey, now that we're totally remote, I'm going to move to, you know, this place. There's a lot of implications that I think corporations have to figure out on this as well.
Yeah, and it's very similar here too. You know, I don't think you can just pick up and go wherever you want, because there may be taxation issues, not just for the corporation, but also for the individual. But I think over time, we'll have a clearer picture of what those implications are, and people may be able to make real choices. But it is interesting, you know, will we in 12 months' time have a better handle on how this is all going to look, and will the majority of people be virtual or not in knowledge-based businesses? It certainly is an interesting time, and I see an awful lot of leaders and CEOs in particular struggling with this. You know, what should we do? And I think there are no hard and fast rules, because you know, it's new. It's, you've got to be agile in this kind of environment. And I guess that planning and structuring and, you know, being on top of your projects and things like that, it's easier to look at that and measure it in a virtual world than it is to see, well, who's got that great big personality and how does that translate? Because I think something gets missing in translation with charisma, certainly online.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, Mary. And that's something that I talked about early on last year about this issue, is that, you know, maybe the virtual thing isn't, I think a lot of people at that time were worried about this is very bad and there's all kinds of problems with the virtual thing. But one of the things that does get downplayed a lot is that charisma, that sort of interpersonal charm that works in the office environment that helps get people promoted to those top roles and might not actually be related to workplace performance or even leadership effectiveness. And so In some respects, the virtual world levels the playing field a little bit, because we can say, like, hey, it's going to be about your productivity. It's going to be about how well your team does. That's what's going to impact who gets promoted. You know, it's sort of like, it's not quite the same thing because we have Zoom, but it's sort of like music before MTV, right? Before music was on television, right? You could only hear it, and it was just about the quality of the voice. It didn't matter about the dress and the hair and the look and the you know, all of those kinds of things that we sort of associate with artists today. I think in some ways it creates a more level playing field for the people who are highly effective, but perhaps not so charismatic or not so good at playing office politics.
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Mary, in your own experience of both managing a virtual team over the last 18 months, but also, as you mentioned, helping many other HR managers kind of manage theirs, I have to ask, like, has there been some successful approaches that you've seen? What have been some of the kind of good ways that you've seen virtual leadership being rolled out or remote working being rolled out?
Yeah, well, I think probably the most important thing is trust. Trusting your employees to deliver on their objectives and goals and projects. You can't see what they're doing, and we've had no option in the last 15 months but to trust people. Me, like everybody else, you know, it was a complete shock to the system March last year when, you know, our country shut down and we went into our first lockdown. And like everybody else, I really grappled with the technology and, you know, being in my home rather than being in an office or in my case, traveling around the country as I did every day. And so there was a huge adjustment for me to make. 15 months on, the adjustment now is about going back into the world and getting back into travel and getting back into what would have been my normal life beforehand. Will I take everything with me? No, because I enjoy the lack of commute. I enjoy the time that I have for myself. And I think, you know, from a leadership point of view, we probably humanized work a little bit more. You know, we've all seen kids running into a room or sitting on someone's knee. We're all acquainted with each other's pets and partners. You know, people are in their kitchens and not everybody has an ideal work from home setup. And so we've probably had that look into people's lives and become more human. And I would like to believe that going forward, that casualness and humanness and that bit where we're interested in each other's welfare and well-being, you know, throughout all of our clients, it's the one thing that managers talk about, the fact that they have reached out more to the people that they manage to check on them and ensure that they're doing okay. And that, I think, is very welcome. And I think, you know, certainly from an employee perspective, the care that's been shown in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, has been important. And I think a lot of employees wish to retain that. So the organizations that have done that well and put employee well-being to the forefront of the HR agenda and to the leadership agenda, I think have done well.
Ryan, could you talk us through your four ways to accelerate long-term effectiveness?
Yeah, so some of this work started, you know, as a result of the COVID-19 sort of situation, remote work. And so some things came up about, well, okay, well, how can we still be effective? How can we continue to be effective teams in these kind of environments? And so, you know, I think in some respects, some of these things we've already sort of moved into and I think are comfortable with. But the first thing that we identified right away in this research was that you have to acknowledge the problem. And so early on, we noticed that there were some leaders sort of not really acknowledging the size of the problem. This particularly had to happen when companies were looking at potentially downsizing, layoffs, furloughs, those kinds of things. we found that it was really important for organizations to acknowledge the impact that it was actually having on a team. And one of the things that that got leaders in a lot of trouble was sort of downplaying the size of the problem. So that's the first thing, is that you really need to acknowledge the problem. A couple of other things that we found next as being important. So one was recognizing what your company's values are and how those values might change in a virtual environment. So, for example, it gives you your company an opportunity to sort of change that culture. Well, sorry to step back for a second there. Your values really drive the culture. And when you're thinking about your culture, when you go virtual, how does that change your culture? I can say from our own organization standpoint, there was a lot of culture of camaraderie, people getting together for lunches, people getting together after office hours in our building. And so when you go virtual, how does that change your culture? And what kind of culture do you want to have going forward? This allows you to sort of look at those questions. And I think that was an important step that a lot of organizations needed to take or have taken since we've gone to this environment. The second concerns norms. So, you know, what are the norms for communication? And this is something we hit on a little bit earlier. How often, how frequently should we communicate? How important is it to have these meetings at what cadence? Should we do video meetings? Should we do audio meetings only? I know there's been talk of sort of a Zoom video burnout. Those kinds of things are really important as well. As at least in the United States, and I know in some other countries as well, transition to at least part of the time back in the office. What are going to be the norms there? How frequently do we need to be in the office? Those kinds of questions are still largely up in the air, and we haven't really figured that out yet. But a whole bunch of research we've done on teams tells us that getting those norms right is really important. People want to know what to expect, and that's what norms really tell you. Like, you know, what can I count on a daily basis? I don't want to have a lot of surprises. You know, we talk about being adaptable, and that's, by the way, going to be the next thing I'll talk about here. But for the most part, people really like to know what they're getting, like what they're coming into. They like the world, our environments, to be predictable. And that's what norms provide us. And so it's really important that organizations figure out what those norms are and communicate those in some way to their employees, for whether it's in the office or in virtual spaces. And then the last one is being adaptable and flexible. This is really no surprise. I think this is one that organizations have known for a long time, that, and this is something I think Mary mentioned earlier as well, that we still don't really know. We think that the virtual or hybrid environment is here to stay for a long time, but we don't really know, you know, what might be next. What are the issues that might come up down the road that will create another need for change and flexibility and adaptability? And that's really the fourth thing that we've seen that organizations need to do to continue to perform well as teams.
Thanks, Ryan. How can organizations use data analytics to help manage virtual teams effectively?
Yeah, so as you might imagine, there's lots and lots going on in this space right now, too, particularly on the performance management side, right? So I think this is a side that this where I think employees are pretty uncomfortable with, right? So we can manage things like, you know, how many hours was your were you on Teams? How many hours were you in Zoom calls? How many hours were you doing emails? Those kinds of things can already be readily quantified from your workplace computer. But I don't think that's probably the best use of these kind of analytics. I mean, those are sort of like productivity oriented things. But I think the more important thing for organizations to be thinking about is how can we use this data to understand the health, the sort of psychological health of our employees. And because, I mean, you know, if our employees are healthy and happy, then they're going to be productive, right? So instead of focusing on the productivity part, it may be much more useful to focus on, who's healthy, who's happy here, what can we do to make these environments, to make the individuals working in these environments, healthier and happier, is probably a better focus of those kind of analytics. And again, the same kind of tools are available for doing that, but it's about getting the focus onto the employees' benefits, the employees' well-being, rather than just thinking about the productivity for the company.
That's Brilliant. That's about all we have time for today, Mary and Ryan. But before we wrap up, Ryan, I might just ask you to tell us exactly how people can find out more about you and the work that you do.
Sure. So our website, HoganAssessments.com, or even HoganAssessments.eu, if you're in Europe, can get you to us. We have distributors all throughout Europe as well, and we can, of course, link you to them. You can find me on LinkedIn, and we can connect there. Those are probably the easiest ways.
That's perfect. Thanks a million, Ryan. So thanks, Mary and Ryan, for joining us today. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.